This is the home of Waddle and Sylvie for the ride home.
Weekdays 2 to 6 on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
This is the first time we've heard Chris Stapleton's Midnight Train to Memphis. Well done, Joe McArdle.
Have you requested this one?
Yes. And Joe told me it was coming, but I've been waiting. And that's a jam right there. Am I right?
Oh, yeah. It sounds good to me. I don't mind any of your country music. I'm not a hater. If it's I'll enjoy it.
Yeah.
It's more progressive these days.
It's accepted by more folks.
And it's more rock, right? Isn't it rock?
Yeah, I mean, that is, like, Stapleton's not this poppy kind of, kind of top 40 artist. I mean, he's going to bring you good old-fashioned country music in a lot of ways.
Okay. Speaking of good old-fashioned country hardball, we'll talk to Hawk Harrelson here in a minute. Kenny in North Judson wanted to weigh in. Hey, Kenny, you're on ESPN 1000.
Hey, how's it going, guys? How you feeling?
We're good. How are
good.
You?
How about you?
I'm doing great. Hey, Sylvie, I just wanted to say you never did answer me if you wanted that baseball card I tweeted you last night.
Oh, the Tewksbury thing. I retweeted that. That was awesome.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because my son, who's a senior this year, unfortunately, in high school, we were bored, and he pulled out a bunch of baseball cards and things, and he was testing me. And these are cards I bought a long time ago. He didn't even look at it, and he pulled that one out. I go, hey, I just heard that guy on the radio. And I said, I got to tweet this to Sylvie.
Yeah, it would have been more apropos if he would have had the bird out instead of the baseball glove.
Yeah.
That's what he basically gave me.
Exactly, but I'm glad you guys are on because really it's a tough time. I'm actually working right now, and we have employees working. We have a business. We sell groceries and things of that nature. But
God bless you guys.
It's good. You know, we all just got to do it and work it together here. As a matter of fact, Tom, I met you guys. You know, my son Cademan did a podcast as a eighth grader, and you came on it years ago.
Nice.
Yeah, you probably don't remember. Yeah.
He doesn't remember anything. He doesn't remember.
How long ago was it?
That was about 7 years. No, it's probably about 5 years ago.
5 years is kind of like the range where, like, there's a chance. Anything beyond five, there's a really good chance that, you know, I'm in the dark.
I know the feeling. Yes, I do. But on the Bears, I really think the competition is great. You know, I've grown up with the Bears. I mean, I was excited when they got Steve Walsh. That's how. But I really think it's really not going to be much of a competition. I felt from the day one that Mitch mentally is really not where he needs to be an NFL quarterback. And I think that's where it's going to really come to fruition for Foles. And I really hope he can get something done because I'm 57 years old and I don't have too long. I want to see another one of these days.
Sure. Kenny, thank you. Keep
you,
doing
Kenny.
Great
Be
work,
safe.
Okay, Kenny?
Yeah.
Hey, do you want that card sent to you, my friend?
I just have the memory. Thank you. That's all I need.
Okay.
Thanks,
all right.
Kenny. There's Kenny. He keeps you. What do you want? The card. He's great. You know who else is great? We've always enjoyed our conversations with Hawk Harrelson. He is going into the Hall of Fame this summer, too. Don't forget the Fort Frick Award. Finally, well overdue. He got it. And, we lost a very important voice in this city. Hawk had been doing the play-by-play on TV for so long. Farmiel, Ed Farmer on radio, and a couple of nights ago, Ed Farmer passed away. And one of the first names we thought about is we got to get Hawk on the air. Hawk, first of all, how are you and your family doing?
Good, guys. How y'all doing up there?
We're hanging in. It's not normal, but we're hanging in there.
Well, it's the same way down here. You know, all it boils down to really is using some common sense and having a little luck, really. It's just you can't do the – it just stymied the whole thing we've known all our lives.
Sure. Yeah. When was the last time you got a chance to talk to Ed, and what are some of your favorite memories of Farmiel?
Oh, we talked and texted quite a bit. Last time was not too long ago, but I knew about a week and a half ago, I tried to call him, and there was no answer. Then I texted him, and there was no response. And when I did that, I told my wife, I said, honey, something's up. And then I talked with Bob Grimm and Scott Reifert, and they told me he was not in good shape. And I'm happy for him because of the fact he was not going to have any quality of life. And the thing about, you know, Barb and Chandra, his wife and daughter, I feel sorry for them that they've had to go through a few years now. As both you guys know, a few years of Ed going through a lot of problems, you know, and that polycystic kidney problem he had. He was just a tough guy. Yeah. And a tough guy that I loved. I loved him. I loved Ed. Like, I've known him for 52 years. I've known him since he was 18 years old. And it didn't take me long to find out that he was a tough son of a gun. All you had to do was watch him on that mound a couple times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Hawk, I mean, you guys shared a lot in common. And one of those things is your intense love for the Chicago White Sox. And that describes that, does it not?
Yes, and he and KJ and myself, you know, we played a lot of golf on the road, and we would all invariably, as you know, we'd be talking about White Sox baseball. And then we'd get on the golf course, and of course that would go away for a while, for a couple of hours, and I'd then have a lot of laughs with Farmio. He was working on his swing, and I said, what the hell are you working on that swing for? Ain't gonna get you anything done. But he was addicted to golf. He loved the game. He absolutely just adored it. And he and DJ, you know, they became so close. I talked with DJ yesterday. And, you know, DJ feels the same way. I shed my tears when Bob Grimm called me and told me. And Scott Reifert texted me at the same time. And then my wife, and daughter and son. Ed was like a part of our family. And my wife and my daughter and our son, Harris, Krista, and Casey, they loved him. Everybody loved Ed. Well, not everybody, but Ed could be ornery at times,
sure.
as you well know. But if you ask him a question, he was going to give you an answer whether you liked it or not. And he was a unique guy. You know, he was really a smart guy. Barry Rosner, I read a story that Dan Dorfman, my good friend here in Chicago, sent me in. Also Bruce Levine. There were a lot of great tributes written about Farmio today, and it's just a shame to a degree for the White Sox fans, because White Sox fans loved him, and I loved to listen to Farmio and DJ on the radio when I wasn't doing a game or if I was driving, you know, they were out of town and I would listen to the game. I'd laugh my behind off most of the time. And they could handle a good game like anybody. You guys, anybody can handle a, you know, 1-0, 2-1, 3-1, 3-2 game. The key to broadcasting in baseball, because of the time and everything else, is handling those 9-0, 13-2, 14-1 games. And they did a great job at that.
We're talking to Hawk Harrelson, a legendary figure here in Chicago. And Hawk, no one, like, I could, on one hand, say no one loves the Sox like Hawk does. But I think Ed did, and Ed did maybe even more. I mean, he was the trifecta, wasn't he? Because he grew up here, loved the Sox as a kid, played for the Sox as a player, scouted for the team, and then broadcast. I mean, that's everything, isn't it?
Well, I'll put it this way in context. Nobody loved the Sox more than Ed and myself. It's just that simple. With Bob Grimm and Scott Reifert, they love the Sox, and we had a lot of guys there, you know, Pete Catazone, Mike Mazza, Ed Casson, who's been with the Sox, you know, longer than I was. And these guys just do a great job. And, you know, I don't like these guys. I love these guys. That's the thing about it. And Farmio did, too. Farmio didn't like them. He loved them. And I love these guys like sons. And it was a very close-knit operation there and a very close-knit organization. And to have him gone now, the only thing I'm going to do right now, because I said, I've already said my prayers and I've already said my tears. I'm just going to celebrate his life. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy for him. He's in a hell of a lot better place now than he was a couple of days ago, I'll tell you that.
Hawk,
because he was a great guy. He was great. He wasn't a good guy. He was a great guy.
Yeah. And that's the greatest compliment you can give, is that a guy was he was good people. And Hawk, in broader terms, I know baseball's on hold right now, but how excited are you about this baseball team and the direction they're going with some of their young guys and what they've put together?
I'm ecstatic about it. I really am. I mean, I'm ecstatic about it. And this coronavirus thing has, you know, just interrupted our whole lifestyle. And, you know, I've got a little conspiracy theories in myself. And I tell you the truth, I'm not so sure it wasn't done on purpose by those people over there. And the only thing they couldn't, you know, they couldn't beat us with the military. The only way they could really hurt us bad would be through the economy. And, boy, I'll tell you what, so far it's worked out for them.
Yeah, from an economic standpoint, we find ourselves in very difficult times. And the hope is that sports will get back on track sooner rather than later because of all the money that is generated from playing baseball and the NBA and the NFL.
Well, the money is certainly a big issue. But the biggest thing is the fans. The fans love their sports. The fans love their baseball. They love their basketball. They love their football. You know, Wimbledon was just canceled, not postponed, canceled. And if and you know, I'm thinking probably there's a good chance that Cooperstown, you know, will be postponed this year because there's going to be over 100,000 people there. You know, Derek Jeter is going in along with Larry Walker, but Derek is going to have every Yankee fan from all over the country kind of trying to get there, as well they should. And but I don't know if they're going to allow over 100,000 people to go out there and, you know, sit in that yard out there that close together, shoulder to shoulder. So we'll have to see. It's just something, you know, we will get through this because that's the American way. It's just that simple. The American way is that, you know, we will not fail. We will not fail, and we'll get through this problem. And that's what Carmio's whole mantra was, with all the problems he had with that cystic problem with his kidneys, he was not going to fail. He wanted to work, and for him, if you'd seen him walk up the ramp to the airplanes the last couple of years, you know, DJ would always get behind him so in case he fell, and then we'd be walking down the hallway on the road to our clubhouse on a visiting team. And I'd stand behind him in case, you know, he would fall. And he was having trouble. He never complained one time, guys. Not one time did he ever complain. And if you ever brought it up, he got pissed off. He said, I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm going to get this done. And that's the kind of guy he was. He was just he's one of those guys you could tie him, but you couldn't beat him.
Hawk, great words. Awesome. We appreciate it as always. All the best to you, okay, and the family.
Thanks, Hawk.
All right, you guys be safe. Be safe, and we'll talk again.
There you go. Hawk Harrelson, paying tribute to Ed Farmer. We wanted to get Hawk on and talk about that, and he knows that, yeah, maybe Cooperstown doesn't happen this year.
Yeah, I've forgotten about that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah.
What, what is that schedule?
Usually, when is it? Like June or July, somewhere in there?
July, usually.
Yeah. All right, so coming up next, I want to recap the contest that we've had all week. And who do you believe? Who do you guys believe is the leader as of now as far as the biggest name drop contest?
Do we have anybody on deck? Is there anybody in no.
Stay tuned.
Oh, really? Okay. We'll get to all that next.
It's Waddle and Sylvie. Follow us on the gram at Waddle and Sylvie and at ESPN _ Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
All right, we're getting through this Friday.
Friday!
It's Friday.
I sound, I now reference it as TGIFF.
Thank God it's Evan Friday.
Yeah, basically.
Do you open up any alcoholic beverage?
Come on. It's 3:20, bro.
No, yesterday. I'm saying it.
No doubt, yeah.
It's a Crown Royal last night.
You did?
First time I went back to the Crown Royal in a couple of months.
Did you have a mixer or are you just going?
No, Crown Royal rocks.
Nice. Look at you.
I'm thinking you have the capacity for the big ice cubes. Like you have, do you have the device at the house?
No, the ball to make the ball, the big ice ball.
Yeah.
Or the square ice cube, the big one where it's just one, right?
Yes.
No.
You got to get that. I don't have it either, but you got to get it.
Yeah. Yeah. It still was good. It still was delicious. I started off with what did I start off with yesterday? I started out with a vodka, a Tito's soda. Then I went to two glasses of,
holy, you were mixing? You went Tito's soda, wine?
Soda wasn't doing the trick. So I'm like, let's do a little Crown Royal. We did, I did two glasses of Crown Royal.
Oh, it wasn't doing the trick.
Oh my God.
And then the fourth glass, I ended with a big glass of rum chata.
My God, how did you?
And then I went to bed, yeah.
That's quite the mixing. You're a mixologist.
I'm okay with that. I'm usually I don't get sick by mixing stuff.
Okay.
I could start with you've seen me at Cut where I could do a martini, then I go to wine, then I go to tequila over on the rocks.
I'm so with you. That's such a myth. It's not the mixing. It's the quantity that you consume. And that's all. And generally when you start to mix, it's large quantities that you're consuming that end up being the downfall.
Right. When you've had 8 beers, then you start deciding to do tequila shots. That's no good.
Stop at 3 or 4.
Not tequila shots. For you, it's like after dinner drinks.
Like I sip on the tequila. Yeah. I like a good sip. Glendon Rush is a former Cub. He was one of the, believe it or not, Waddle, as I tell you about the 04 Cubs all the time, the 03 Cubs came so close. The 04 Cubs, I thought they were going to win the World Series, and they gave me a lot of headaches and heartache. Glendon Rush, I always say, is one of like the nice guys on that 04 team. Yes. And there were some guys that I did not like. But Glenn, and he calls in right now for the biggest name drop competition, former Cubs pitcher. Hi, Glendon. How you feeling?
I'm good. What's up, guys? Thanks for having me. Thought it'd be fun to call in. I know everybody's bored at home, so good stuff.
What are you doing to pass the time these days?
I am, just being a dad, working in the yard, trying to find stuff to do around the house. That's about it. I guess same thing everybody's doing.
Right.
How old are your kids?
I got a sophomore and a sixth grader, both boys.
Wow. Are they baseball players, too?
Yeah, they're both playing, and unfortunately they're not playing right now, but they both enjoy it. And they were, both little guys kind of when I was finishing up my career. And my oldest one was a little dude sitting on the dugout at Wrigley and hanging out in the ivy on family day. So he's 16 already now.
Did you make them throw left-handed when they were like 1 or 2 years old, just like you?
I should have. I gave them all my bad traits. Neither one of them can run. They're both right-handed. So, yeah, they're in trouble.
When you watch this Cubs team do what they did in 2016, and actually 15, 16, 17 for did you watch it thinking that ultimately they would find the promised land, or did you think the team was just never going to ever get there?
No, I definitely felt like they had a chance in 16, and I had an absolute blast watching them. I went to all the games. I went to all the NLCS games in L.A. because at the time I was living in Southern Cal. And then I went to 3, 4, and 5 of the World Series at Wrigley, too. I went with Paul Bacco and Kerry Wood and a bunch of us guys off that 04, 05 kind of era. We're all there. So it was pretty cool.
But, I was at Game 4. And in Game 5, the life was sort of restored. But were you, when you're sitting there during 4 and it's all hitting the fan, are you like, oh boy, here they go again? Or did you think they would have a chance to rebound and come back?
No, it looked bleak for sure. But I think that, they were so resilient and such a great tight-knit group. And I think they just, they did what they had to do and kept their nose to the grind and they were able to pull it out.
What do you remember about I mentioned the 04 team because I had such great hopes and it ended so poorly. What do you remember most about that team?
How much fun I had. Those guys were so much fun. I felt like I was joining, you mentioned earlier, I felt like I was joining a World Series team really when I got there in 04 after what they did in 03 and you know, just as talented or a better team probably in 04. And we were just never able to get on that one hot streak, especially down the stretch, you know, like in August and September. That's when you need to get hot, and we were just never able to do it.
Glendon, what do you think the season is going to look like? I know there's so much uncertainty, and maybe the predictions are you know, we shouldn't be in the prediction business right now. But are you still holding out hope that the 2020 Major League Baseball season will have something to it?
I am. I'm an internal optimist, and always, you know, can't wait for baseball season because I love watching. I love following it. If I were to guess, I know predictions are terrible right now, but we might as well do one anyways. But if I were to guess, I would say that hopefully maybe like the beginning of July or something, they could get something underway and we could see a part of a season with some doubleheaders and a little bit of an expanded roster. And, you know, who knows, if they get in 100 to 120 games and play deeper into the year, we could still have quite a season to see. But obviously health and everything else is first and foremost right now, but I would love to see them get back and play because I know everybody's missing it.
Glendon, who told you about the contest and to call in?
His name is Jeff Berta. He's a guy that he's talked to me, I guess, a bunch at during the Cubs conventions over the years, and so he tweeted me yesterday, and I said, sure, I'll call in. Sounds like fun.
Awesome. So, well, we appreciate it. You've always been a class act, a fun guy to talk to. Thanks for calling so much, Glendon.
Thank you, guys.
You guys have a great weekend. Stay safe. Glendon Rush, the former, as he describes himself on his Twitter page, he says, former 88-mile-per-hour throwing average major leaguer for 12 season. Hashtag Royals, hashtag Mets, hashtag Brewers, hashtag Cubs, hashtag Padres, hashtag Rockies.
Hey, listen, if you can throw and you're left-handed, there's a good chance,
yes,
you know, you can find yourself a career in Major League Baseball.
That's why I thought he would make it. That's why I would think that, like, you would put the ball in your kid's left hand. A lot of people said that to me. And I'm like, my kids aren't going to be pitchers. You know, I let them be whatever they gravitated towards. They start using their right hand, they use their right hand. But I know a lot of, like...
Are they righties or lefties?
They're righties.
Or they are.
And, like, there are a lot of parents who do that intentionally.
Really?
Try to lead a kid. And there's, like, been... I think there are studies that are conflicting where some parents think you can, and some parents think that can't be taught.
I'm one that does... I think you're born with a dominant hand. I think maybe you could get your kid in the batting cage and maybe see if they could be switch hitters or they could hit from both sides of the plate. But I'm reluctant to think that you can, from an early stage, get your child to be a righty or a lefty.
Right. That's the debate. All right. So who have we had on so far, Abdallah? I mean, the quantity has been big.
Who haven't we had on?
Right. It's the biggest name drop competition. We've got meat and gambling vouchers. We'll give special shout outs to all of our sponsors, the two sponsors of this great contest later in the show. But who so far has the station had on?
So it all started with Cap kicking us off on Monday with Jim Peterik from Survivor, The Ides of March, as you guys know. Then we had Rudy Rudiger on. That's the real Rudy, not the guy who played Rudy, the real Rudy. Then Hank Azaria, who I think is the leader in the clubhouse right now.
Really?
I'm just saying. Hank Azaria, voice of Apu and from, you know, the Birdcage, and he did Brockmeyer for us. Some great Mitchell Trubisky takes. Then we had Mike Singletary, the Hall of Famer, mm-hmm. Call in. Patrick Renna, who was Ham Porter, you're killing me, Smalls. We had Chris Cluey call in. Cap had this one. The American Airlines person who does the videos before you take off.
The one who, in case you didn't know, teaches you how to fasten your seatbelt.
Yeah, that she called in.
Take the buckle.
Yeah. Put it through. Put the mask on the person next to you.
Right.
Put on your own mask.
No, put on your own mask first.
Oh,
that's what it is.
You've got to come on. That's a man behind us
without kids. Clearly,
you've got to take care of yourself first, so you can help many others. Then,
right? You got to make sure that you're.
I don't know about you guys. I'm saving my kids first because I'm that kind of person. I'm selfless like that, so I'm going to help my kids first. And if I inhale a little carbon monoxide or whatever it is, then so be it. My kids need to live longer than me. Anyway, I digress.
I don't want to minimize the participation of anyone in their role in life. But I'm going to say that she's probably not going to win. Is that fair?
You never know. You never know.
Okay. Then we had Jim Palmer, the pitcher.
Enjoyable conversation.
Oh, great conversation. Smooth as the day is long, that Jim Palmer.
In everything he does.
Mark DiCarlo, the comedian and actor, called in.
He's been nice on guy. Seinfeld before.
Yeah. Seen him in the hallways because he's done a lot of work with Windy City Live.
Junior Bridgman called in.
Former NBA player.
Yeah. Junior Bridgman's worth like hundreds of millions of dollars, too, because doesn't he own a ton of fast food restaurants?
I think you did mention that before.
Mike Vlamis, if you don't know who that is, he's in the hit show Roswell. The hit show Roswell, I don't know what network it's on, but it's on the network.
CW.
Yes, there you go, the CW. Gilbert Gottfried called in to Carmen and Yurko. We had Dennis DeYoung.
Yeah, we did.
Sticks. I was listening to Sticks last night.
You said Sticks, right? Nicole Stott, the astronaut, called in. She's been in space, people.
Now, listen. Listen, she would get my vote, but I don't know that she'll get the vote because I enjoyed the interview more than anything, but maybe it's not the most famous person.
Maybe.
What do you guys think?
Yeah,
I thought she was great.
Right. She was great. I don't know how this is being judged.
Right.
Like, I mean, the biggest name.
That's one of the most fun interviews I've done, from my perspective, in a decade.
We had Miguel Cervantes. If you don't know who that is, it's Hamilton, from Hamilton.
Like, he's the lead actor now on Broadway. They're dark at Broadway now. And for the 3.5 years it was in Chicago, he was the lead here. Now he's taking over on Broadway.
Then we had Roy Wood Jr., the comedian. He's on The Daily Show. Big Chicago Cubs fan.
Cranky Anchors.
Yeah. Kyle Calder, the former Blackhawk, called in. Yeah, go Hawks.
Member of the ABC line.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Can't forget.
Who was on the ABC line?
Ron Majors and Mark Jean Greco.
Go ahead, Waddle. Give it to me. The ABC line.
The ABC line. Was it there in Aronson?
Arneson. Tyler Arneson.
Close.
Arneson. Calder.
He was the C.
And the B was... Damn. I'm lost. Bell. I had it, and then I lost it.
Bell. Can you give me his first name? Bell.
Mike.
Kerwin.
Wasn't one of those guys... Didn't one of those guys fight with Brent Sutter outside a bar?
Yeah.
Arneson. Wasn't it? Was it Sutter or was it Fleury?
Sure.
No, it wasn't.
When he was coaching, you mean? Yeah, I think it was when Arneson. He was coaching. I believe it was Arneson.
I knew it was someone from there.
Then this morning, Cap had Frank Calabrese Jr. call in.
Mobster.
Former mobster.
Carmen did not like that.
Well, I mean.
I'm just saying. Carmen didn't like it.
Snitches get stitches. Bobby Douglas called in to Cap this morning. Bobby Douglas.
Former quarterback.
Jeff Lowe, if you don't know who that is, he's in the Tiger King. He's the guy that bought the zoo.
He's not in the Tiger King so far yet for me, but I'm looking forward to it.
Cap needed a towel after that. I mean, for some reason.
For the guy who's never seen it.
Yeah.
Then the Carmen and Yurko show had Clay Harbor call in, my personal favorite, Clay Harbor of Bachelorette fame and Bachelor in Paradise. He lives in Chicago. He played for the Lions.
I think he'd be a better option right now than Jimmy Graham, to tell you the truth.
Maybe.
How old is he now?
That's a good question.
Thank you. Do I get anything?
No, you don't get a point for that in Good Question Sundays.
All right, well, you want to discuss who? Let's all pick someone.
Andre Royo, who's Bubbles, then Glendon Rush.
Okay, well, we'll say who we think is the leader coming up to start Waddle's World next.
It's that time again when we venture deep into the great unknown.
And in Chicago, Tom Waddle. He can't run, he's not fast, but he gets open.
A trip inside the mind of a multi-concussed former Bears wide receiver.
He caught everything that was thrown and took every hit that they could give him, and he had an all-time day in the use of smelling salts.
Buckle up, boys and girls.
Tom Waddle, everything wants to have a Tom Waddle. If I had a football team, I'd like to have a Tom Waddle on my team because you draw from that.
It's time to go inside Waddle's World.
Tom Waddle did have to use a lot of smelling salts.
That's right. John Waddle's World, brought to you by the great people at Wintrust Community Banks. They are Chicago's banks. Find your nearest Wintrust Community Bank. Visit wintrust.com/findus. Member FDIC. As you heard earlier, we played you the audio. Bears are set to have an open competition between Mitchell Trubisky and Nick Foles. Thumbs up, guys?
Yes. Yes, make him earn it. Whoever it is, make Foles earn it too. Beat him out.
Okey-dokey. Who wins?
Foles.
Okay. Abdallah, who wins?
I took the news today as the Bears basically saying we have a new starting quarterback. There is no world where both quarterbacks are healthy where Nick Foles loses to Mitchell Trubisky?
It's like I said earlier in the show, it's a good question for Jeff Dickerson, who watched every throw that Mitch made in camp last year and then let us all know that things looked a little off, and to get his gauge on whether or not he thinks that he'll have 180-degree improvement in training camp. I don't know. It's going to be really interesting, fellas. It really is. The other big story today, Bulls begin their search for a top executive who will have full authority on basketball decisions, according to Woj, who I saw this on the Twitter machine first. I saw Woj with it. Among the Bulls' initial plans will be to seek permission to interview Nuggets general manager, whose name I can't pronounce, and Toronto GM Bobby Webster. I'm good with that name. Arturis Karnisovas?
Yeah.
Karnisovas?
Yeah.
Okay. Among other candidates, sources told ESPN and Woj, Bulls plan to have a new leadership well before any possible resumption of play during the NBA shutdown because of the coronavirus pandemic. So we're going to have a new boss before the ball's in the air again, huh, guys?
Going to interview all these guys, and you know it's going to be Kirk Heinrich.
God, no, it's not. Don't say that. And that's no disrespect. What's Kirk doing right now?
I just read it was in Casey's mailbag. He's running like some sort of a gym or a training facility in South Dakota.
Yeah, you don't go from that to... Giannis doesn't have access to a basketball hoop to practice.
You can...
this is stunning to me.
Meller said this to me at the break. He's like, have you seen this story? A lot of NBA players have a court in their house or something, but now I just get home workouts. I ride the bike, treadmill, lift weights, and pretty much stay sharp that way, but I don't play basketball. That's comforting to Milwaukee Bucks fans, isn't it?
Come on, somebody's got it that he knows has to have a hoop that he's got access to.
And the entire story, too, there's a follow-up where Chris Middleton says the same thing. Chris Middleton, their other all-star on the team, doesn't have access to a hoop either.
I think you got to shoot during this.
How do you guys, like, let's just say, let's play the what-if game. What if they get back to work June 1st? Let's say they're isolated in wherever. They're in
Vegas. Say Vegas.
Yeah, Vegas. And it looks like a, you know, part of the, like, the summer league stuff. What do you think, the games are going to look like? Is it going to be ragged? Is it going to be bad basketball, or do you think it's going to be decent?
Are they going right into the playoffs, or are they going to include
I don't think you can go right into the playoffs. I think you would have to have some sort of modified ending to your regular season. That's what I think. You'd almost use those games as
a way
to get yourself back on
track. They serve as the preseason almost. I think they'll be a little bit not as good as usual.
And what will it be like with no crowd in a small gym, with no energy from the building? How will it be different? What will the officials be like? I don't know. It's none of this.
Yeah.
None of this is known, Waddle.
You're right.
I just want to see it soon.
A 17-game schedule could force the 2024 in New Orleans to move. If the Super Bowl gets pushed back a week to February 11th that year as expected, then it will run into Mardi Gras. So the NFL, the New Orleans Saints, and the Greater New Orleans Sports Foundation have been working on contingency plans. Most likely scenario is moving the New Orleans Super Bowl to a later year, though they have not yet ruled out trying to play the game on February 4th that year. So 2024, the Super Bowl is set for New Orleans, and New Orleans is like, dude, no Super Bowl here. We got Mardi Gras.
Too much going on. We can't handle this many people.
Preakness Stakes has been postponed. Second race in the Triple Crown supposed to take place May 16th. The date for when the race will take place has not been determined. Whenever the race is held this year, it will go on without infield activities. So you're not going to be able to watch on the infield. So no infield for you. WNBA is delaying the start of training camps and regular season because of COVID-19. What's this story? Evan Gattis says the Astros obviously cheated baseball and cheated fans.
He was on the Astros
right,
and during that season, catcher DH.
Where were you at before?
Yeah, but at least look, a lot of them have been in denial. At least you're admitting, you know, Keuchel hasn't even really, he's not on their team anymore, and he still really hasn't.
He said, and we cheated that for sure, and we obviously cheated baseball and cheated fans. Fans felt duped. I feel bad for fans. I don't know.
Better late than never?
Okay, but like, I don't know.
A lot of them have wagged their finger at us.
Who have?
The Astros.
Really?
Said, yeah, yeah, sure.
I forgot. It's been so long. I mean, Sammy Watkins has agreed to restructure contract with the Chiefs. 1 year. A deal that could max out $16 million, including $7 million in incentives. Boy, the Chiefs, I mean, like, Sammy Watkins is not an elite receiver anymore, but boy, is he is a nice weapon to have in your offensive huddle.
Oh, yeah. So, and he played well in the postseason.
He did. Premier League season suspended indefinitely. All right, I see
him. Yeah, bring me up, too. You know, all this, yeah, all this down stuff. You
okay,
know?
When we come back, I got some Netflix, a Pornhub gaffe. I've got Tom Brady moving into a famous guy's house.
Oh, yeah. This was my idea for Brady playing here.
Yeah, yeah. And a couple other things before we get to Florida or Ohio.
Coming up next.
Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Bring Waddle and Sylvie with you at home or in your office. Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
This is your story, all right? You ready?
Yeah.
Tom Brady's arrived in Tampa, and he's moving into Derek Jeter's mansion.
See, they should have done that. The Bears should have pitched this with Michael Jordan's mansion.
Brady has arrived in Tampa Bay and is in the process of moving his family into the sprawling 30,000-square-foot mansion on Davis Islands built by Yankee Hall of Famer Derek Jeter. I've seen pictures of it. It's quite impressive. Quite impressive.
What it's worth what? $30 million? Did I read?
30,000 square foot home.
30,000.
Yeah, I don't know how much it's worth, but it's 30,000 square feet. This is for Mellor.
What do you think about that? Like, I mean, if you're Tom Brady, do you like? You're like, it's Jeter's house. I mean, are you? I guess you're leasing somebody's house, and I guess if it's Derek Jeter's, fine.
Is this like a? Remember the Carlos Boozer, the famous Prince story, where he is this where Tom Brady like he sees number two, like a big two, and then he just puts like a big one in front of it to make it his own.
Yeah,
TB12.
Does he have a gate with the number two on it, like Michael is the 23?
That's a good question.
Yeah, you could just add the one.
English soccer star's Netflix binge reveals that he had some Pornhub something going on.
Of course.
Norwich defender Tim Close. Is that how you say it, Mellor?
Spell it.
K-L-O-S-E?
Yes.
Shared an Instagram story with a Pornhub tab open on his browser, and everyone saw it.
I mean, it really is that big of a deal.
Is that big of a deal? No, I don't think they really were saying that.
The pandemic has brought back men sending softcore stuff to friends. Just like you did today, Waddle, with the tan lines.
Listen, I was just passing along something that I got a text line from my boys in Boston. There's 16 guys on it. And it's not safe. I mean, it's not.
Do you have to guard your phone so that your daughters don't accidentally see?
My daughters don't. They got their listen. My daughters, they're buried in their own phones. They don't have any interest in my phone.
By the way,
but I wouldn't show it to them.
I see Abdallah is talking to somebody who I believe is going to be ready soon to come on.
Okay.
And I think you'll be.
I think
happy.
I know who it is.
Oh, you know who it is?
I think so.
We were just talking to Al Michaels on the anniversary.
I believe he's been a good friend of my father-in-law's for quite some time.
American sports hero Mike Arruzzioni joins Waddle and Sylvie in the biggest name drop competition. Mike, happy belated anniversary.
Thank you, guys. Hey, Tommy, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Mike. My father-in-law, yes. Gino Capelletti, has said nothing but wonderful things about you.
He's the best. He's the best. I think he just had a birthday, didn't he, just recently?
He did, yes. Yep. Thank you. Yeah, he did.
No, I love Gino. I actually, believe it or not, way before the Olympics, I caddied for Gino and Babe Parilli down in Winthrop. In Winthrop, they used to have an event called the Italian Open.
Yeah.
And a guy named Al Cibloni, who owned a restaurant in Boston.
Yeah.
And it was close with Gino and Babe, and it was at my little nine-hole golf course, and I caddied for him.
Isn't that awesome? I mean, that was back in the day.
A long time ago.
Back in the day, Mike, those old Patriots, Boston Patriots, they had some fun, and they ran the town pretty well.
Yes, they did. And I played a lot of golf with Gino over the years, and boy, he could play. He's an awfully good stick, and he's a good man. And it's been a while. You and I have talked before, but I think it was quite a while ago. it's not often a BU guy talks to a BC guy.
But that's right.
You're a football player, so that's okay.
Yeah, well, I got to tell you, Mike, I've probably told you this in the past. Football players, we were second-class citizens at BC. Everyone was all over the hockey team. I think we were lucky to have 25 or 26,000 people at our games. Hockey was much more important in that building.
Well, you had a Winthrop kid was there. I'm not sure if Joey Giaquinto was there when
I played with Joey, yeah. Joey, number one. He wore jersey number one.
Yeah, he was a great athlete. As a matter of fact, I live, his brother's house is right directly, my backyard and his brother's backyard together. And once in a while, Joey comes up. I think his daughter's at Bentley College. I think she's a volleyball player, a scholarship player, great athlete, not surprised.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, I'll see Gia in the backyard, and we kind of talk over the fence to each other.
Oh, you'll have to tell him I say hello next time you see him.
Oh, I absolutely will.
I can listen to you two talk all day. This is great stuff.
Great.
Yes,
it's great.
It is awesome.
Look, I haven't had a chance to get back to Boston in a long time, and obviously I had such a great time there in college, and it's kind of my second home. So it's great to hear your voice, Mike, for sure.
Same here, Tom. Thanks.
So don't go anywhere here. Mike Ruzioni is online with us. It's Waddle and Sylvie. Mike, of course, was the captain of the 1980 U.S. Olympic team that won gold medal. They just had the anniversary. And, Mike, I don't know if you heard, we had Al Michaels on. He's a big friend of the show. And he talked to us from Vegas, from where you guys had the big celebration. How was that for you guys?
Oh, it was great. The Vegas Knights did a spectacular job of bringing the team back. They honored us at a Knights game. Then actually the next day we started a NASCAR race, which was kind of cool. I've never done anything like that. We had, I think it was 15 or 16 guys on the team back out of 19, which is pretty good. And Al was there. We've determined that Al has become the mascot. he's the mascot of the 80 Olympic team, because whenever we try to get together, we always put an invite out to Al, and, he's actually been able to come to a few of the little events that we've had, but, he's a special part of our team, and he's a good man. I've got to know him very well over the years, so not only broadcasting with him at Olympic Games, but we've played some golf over the years together as well.
Mike, we were surprised to find out how Al actually got the job calling hockey in those Olympic Games. It was because nobody else had ever called a hockey game before.
Yeah, he was the only guy that ever did a game, and I guess he was with Rune Aldridge in a room, and they said, anybody done hockey before? And Al raised his hand, and he said, they went, okay, Al, you're going to do hockey. That's just how it was.
Yeah.
Howard Cosell, I remember years later, I met Howard Cosell when I was broadcasting, and I was in the elevator with Howard, and he looked at me, and he said, if I was covering the Olympic Games, you'd have been bigger than you are. Bigger than you are.
And
I just... And I was like, wow, that's typical Howard Cosell.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. Hey, Mike, I know you guys you guys were kids when you were in the Olympics, but the one thing that has always come to my attention when I watch, and I was old enough to watch and everything, but in the documentaries in past years, they've done a really good job on showing how important that sports moment was to the country because of what the country was going through with the Iranian hostage situation, with the Russians invading Afghanistan. How important will sports be to lead the way back after this pandemic?
I think it would be huge, just because people, you know, they rally behind sports. You know, now you're going to watch your Chicago teams play. We're going to watch our Boston teams play. And people take great pride in watching their cities and their towns and their professional teams, as well as, you know, the college teams, because some of the colleges are huge in certain cities around the country. And it's just a great escape from all the, you know, the drama. And, you know, let's just say we can get through this virus, and we will, and it'll take some time. But people are going to be looking for something to do and somewhere to go and someone to cheer for and someone to root for. And I think sports does that. It brings out the spirit in everybody. And, you know, I think we saw that clearly in 1980. I mean, to us, it was a hockey game, but you know, we've realized 40 years later it was far greater than a hockey game. As a country, we were looking for something to feel good about it, and all of a sudden we come along. And I think that would be the same thing in sports, although I think our moment was very different because it was the country. It was the United States, and we represent the country. But in Chicago, you're waiting for you know, the Cubs and the White Sox and the Blackhawks and the Bulls and everyone else and the Bears to get together and play. And Chicago people are going to be excited, as will Boston and L.A. and Detroit and but the Olympics is different, and I think that's what made our moment different than other sporting events. But clearly, sports would be a huge thing to have happen to get us back in the out in the street and out of the doldrums that we're all dealing with right now. Tragedies, obviously.
Yeah, Mike, I was going to say, I bet it never gets old when you get together with the guys and the memories are flowing. And maybe some of the stories kind of get bigger and even better as time goes on. But I can only imagine how great those moments are for you guys.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. We are the most immature people you would ever want to see. I'm one of the older guys at 65. And when we get together, you would think we're 12 years old. The emails, the texts that go back and forth, my wife sees them and just shakes her head. It's like, I can't believe you guys are grown men with kids and grandkids. And it's fun. It is a bond. And, yeah, and Tommy, you know you're on teams. It's a bond and a friendship that you have for life. And, you know, when we get together, it's really funny because we don't talk about the Olympics at all. It's never brought up. Remember the goal that this guy scored or the play that this guy made? We talk about what we're doing today. We talk about our kids, our grandkids, you know, who's fat, who's bald, who's divorced, what's your handicap, how many fish did you catch the last time you went fishing. It's all those things that we talk about, and never once does the Olympic Games come up.
I know O'Callaghan is bald. I mean, we can talk about that, can't we?
he's not in Chicago anymore. He's renting down in Jacksonville. He bought a truck. And he moved to Jacksonville.
Wow. We just saw him, too, though, at a steakhouse.
He loves Chicago. He has a great love for the city, but I think he was just looking for a little change of pace in his life.
Mike, before we let you go, we were asking Rudy this question. We had Rudy Rudiger on from the movie. And I just rewatched Miracle on the anniversary for this reason. Like, let's go through, like, the again scene. When you guys are doing is that true or is that a little bit made for movies?
No, we skated. All 20 of us didn't skate. Only 16 of us dressed that night for the game, and Buzz Schneider got thrown out for fighting. So 15 of us did it, and we skated. We spent a good hour and a half, hour and 15 minutes, and we did them, you know, 15 minutes at a time, and then we stretched, and then we did them again, and then that continued. Then they shut the lights off. And we thought we were done, but Herb skated us again. And finally the drill ended, and we went back in the locker room, and he said, gentlemen, if you play this way again tomorrow, you're going to skate again. Well, we beat Norway 8-0 the next day. So the point was well taken. If you're not going to play hard and respect people, you're not going to win, and you're going to skate. So lesson learned.
What about the speeches? Were the speeches accurate in the movie?
Now, a little longer. You know, I think the speech before the Soviet game, I remember it being, you were born to be a player, you are meant to be here, this moment is yours. In the movie, it went a little longer. I tell people, if Herb spoke that long to us before the game, we would have fell asleep, because that was a long speech that Kurt Russell did. But, you know, the movie was done well. It was, you know, I tell people the HBO documentary was better than the movie, but I thought the movie was done well. I thought Kurt Russell was actually brilliant as Herb. It was eerie how good he was, although a little friendlier in the movie than he was. They kind of softened him up a little, but I think the movie captured what the moment meant to our nation, and I think what it meant to the sport of ice hockey and how big the victory was.
Mike, we appreciate the time. I told Waddle this when we were talking to Al Michaels. Like, every time I run into Jack O'Callaghan or get to talk to you, I'm still that 10-year-old who got to witness, like, one of the greatest sports moments of my lifetime. So, again, thank you for that, and thank you for calling today.
Thanks, Mike.
Well, thanks, Mike. Thanks, Tom. My good friend Andy Gable, a former Olympian, called me and said, you got to call into the show. So I said, sure. Just like everyone else, I'm sitting around watching television. So thanks for having me on, guys, and Tommy, if you talk to Gino, tell him I said hello.
I definitely will, Mike. Thanks very much. You're the best, buddy.
Okay, guys. Take care.
Legendary American sports hero Mike Ruzioni, captain of the 80 Miracle on Ice U.S. Olympic team. We're back in two minutes with J.D.